I am just trolling.
From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what you're trolling.
Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. We are back. I'm here in Playa Vista with Joey Galino.
How's it going?
And only Joey Galino.
That's right.
Yeah, we're gonna keep this short, and well, not really short. We're gonna talk for a little bit, and we're gonna start with the USA, but we will get to the Champions League. So stay tuned for that later.
I was gonna say, once you get me started on the US, we might be here for an hour. So who knows?
Yeah, I think you know what? I think we need to do this because it's something that has been lingering around, and really, it's still bugging people. You know, today I was at my other day job, we'll call it. And we were, you know, I was watching Champions League, and as I was talking, somebody just looked at me in the room and said, "I don't want to hear about it." I was like, "Hear about what? What are you talking about?" And he looks at me and goes, "No, since the U.S. happened, I don't want to hear about any soccer." I'm like, "Well, I'm talking about Chelsea and Roma up here." And he's like, "I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
Right now, you know what? People are still hurting, and I understand why. It was a huge, massive disappointment. It still is. Because you know what? 2018 is coming. One way, it's going to go down. There will be a World Cup, and America will not be there.
Yep.
Christian Pulisic will be not playing. He'll be watching on television like the rest of us. So, Joey, I'm going to open the floor to you. What the hell happened?
It's such a combination of a lot of different things. I think directly you can look at the fact that Bruce Arena set up the exact same way he did against Panama on Friday. And while that was the perfect setup at home when you needed points, you needed 3 points, and you were more attacking and open and things like that, it was not the perfect setup for Trinidad and Tobago, where you basically just needed a point to guarantee, you know, a third place, I believe. So automatic qualification, not even like in the playoff round. But he stuck with the same lineup. Cameron stayed out of the lineup. You know, there was the midfield was a little too open. And granted, you know, Trinidad and Tobago, their second goal was fantastic. It was an outstanding world-class strike that not a lot of great goalkeepers could stop, even Howard maybe in his prime. But the spirit didn't seem to be there. It seemed like the guys thought that they were already through to Russia. And then, you know, and I do get it on some level. It's like a 93% chance, I think. 538 said the U.S. had to qualify.
Let's clarify this. The reason it was that high, and first of all those probabilities. Hey, guess what? The 7% happened, right?
It did.
But the reason it was that high is because Trinidad and Tobago were awful.
They're terrible.
They're awful in qualifying. I don't care what pitch they're on. I don't care where you're playing that game. They're not in the same league as the United States. They should never beat them in a match that counts, where you have your first team out there,
especially with like the C team. They're basically playing like a U-20 team. Trinidad and Tobago was,
and you know what? The United States just laid an egg
completely.
And you cannot lay an egg when the World Cup is on. You know what they call it, right? They call it the World Cup Finals. Because you have to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the finals. That's what you generally in Europe, that's what they refer to it. The actual World Cup is called the World Cup Finals because the qualifying portion is the earlier rounds and the quote unquote group stages or whatever you want to call it. Well, this was effectively a final to get to the finals. And the USA didn't turn up in the final. They knew what they had to do, they just didn't do it.
And I think that, you know, there's like Europe and America have been throwing shade at each other on Twitter and about which is more tough to qualify out of. You know what? I'm sorry. As far as I'm concerned, the only place where it's actually tough to qualify for the World Cup in the world is South America.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people would agree with that. The U.S. had so much breathing space and so much leniency and still wasn't able to get it done. I don't want to hear about the Panama goal that admittedly should not have counted. The fact that it came down to that is embarrassing in the first place, and it's a combination of maybe sticking with Jurgen Klinsmann for too long, and you know he was tactically inept, and you know he tried to experiment and do all these things that were kind of productive to the team. There was no consistency there. Bruce Arena was brought back in to kind of reorganize and steady the ship, and while he did, you know, you really started to see that generational divide that has shown up with the U.S. national program, where you've got stars like Clint Dempsey and Michael Bradley and Tim Howard, who are still there and still very much part of the team and still very integral to it. But you've also got younger guys like Christian Pulisic is the big name, but there's a couple others here and there that are there. And then there's kind of a gap. You know, the early 20s guys aren't there, and you can point to the fact that the U.S. has missed the last two Olympic Games. The U.S. is not – there's not been an adequate room for development and adequate experience for development for those guys. So you've got an imbalanced roster, and, you know – it just it reared its ugly head at the worst possible time, and you kind of maybe the U.S. just sunk into this feeling that, you know, when I was born, like the U.S. hadn't been to the World Cup since 1950 or something like that, and then Paul Caligiuri obviously had the famous strike against coincidentally Trinidad and Tobago to qualify for the U.S. Or the U.S. for Italia 90, and then ever since then the U.S. has been in every World Cup, so it almost becomes kind of like you think it's a right, but it's most certainly not. That's clear as day after what happened.
No, but you know what? I will say I come down on the side of Europe is tougher to qualify. I don't think, considering how bad this campaign was. I mean, they sacked their manager, fired, you know, in American terms, fire the manager halfway through. And still, all they had to do was get a draw at the worst team. One point. That's all they needed at the worst team in qualification. So if you're trying to tell me that it's real tough to qualify, you played so poorly that you fired your manager, and then you still didn't really play that well, and all you have to do was go to the worst team on the last day and get a draw. Not even a win, a draw. And you still couldn't do it.
You've got like two things that were worth bragging about, maybe three, that were worth bragging about the whole final round of the Hex, and that was the two big wins at home, one against Honduras, one against Panama. And then the draw at Azteca was not nothing to sneeze at. That was a good result too. But you know, other than that, the team was underwhelming the whole time, and it cost them.
The Costa Rica match, I thought, was telling.
That was the key, it ultimately proved. Because even if you get a point out of that, you know, you're in a different place. But instead, you get outclassed tactically. Yeah. And then I don't know what happened with Jeff Cameron and Bruce Arena. But after that match, it seemed like Bruce Arena had no faith in Cameron. I don't think he played a minute. Maybe he did in the second half. I think he actually might have come on as a sub in Honduras when Bobby Wood had to score that last gasp equalizer. But it just it for whatever reason it dropped Cameron down the rung and he would, you know, and then this past weekend he walks right back into the 11 for Stoke City against Manchester City. Now granted, City won that game big, like 7-2 over Stoke, but it still says something about the level of player that Cameron is, where even if he's not starting for the U.S. national team in CONCACAF, he's good enough to start for a mid-table Premier League side pretty much week in and week out. And it's just, you know, we don't have that kind of player overall in spades. Well, you know, you got to take advantage of him.
So what I'll say is, you know, if anyone who's listened to the podcast or enough knows that I'm the guy who's not pro-MLS, pro frankly, American soccer, and not against the U.S. team by any means. I just don't think that they're that much fun to watch. And, you know, they've gotten more entertaining over recent years. Frankly, they were more entertaining under Klinsmann because he brought in all these guys from Europe, guys that you actually knew from watching them play in those leagues, or that I knew, I'll say, because I don't really watch MLS. But I thought that the best the team, in terms of how it was organized and how it looked, and I'm not saying they played winning football by any means, but in terms of you could see the quality uptick, it was when he did all this recruiting of players that were frankly already established and hadn't really declared nationality but had some roots in the U.S. But that kind of disguised the fact that, hey, the youth level is not really producing the right level of players, and that didn't really remedy that issue at all. So once Klinsmann's gone and all these, frankly, German-Americans who viewed Klinsmann as a god for being what he did with Germany, those guys aren't going to be rushing back to join America in the near future. And you look at the next pool, really the U.S. football program, the association, everything, you look at it, and there are serious issues that are going to come up in 2022 and 2026. Okay, the World Cup field is probably going to expand. U.S. will probably get in just for that reason alone.
And for being a host in 2026.
Well, hey.
Potentially.
Yeah, we're all knocking on wood that happens on Bobby Wood. But in reality, the truth is, when you look at the way it's set up, yes, Christian Pulisic is a phenomenal talent that the U.S. will have and has right now. But why is that? Oh, right, he plays in Europe. The best players in this sport go and play in Europe. That's naturally how it is. I thought Bruce Arena, one of the things that he kind of did a little bit more than I would have liked is he went back to that, I want to call it almost Bob Bradley mentality of, no, we can get guys domestically. And I think he went a little bit even overboard than even Bradley would have done. he really kind of focused on the domestic pool. And it really, like, one thing that rubbed me really the wrong way about this whole thing was the Gold Cup, when he didn't even call the foreign players. And it was a weird tournament. I understand, you know, Mexico sent their C team, frankly, because they were playing the Confed Cup. U.S. was hosting it, so they should have won it without even a doubt. And they did eventually win it. But I looked at that, and I looked at that as kind of a weird nothing tournament where you had the opportunity to maybe build some momentum, get a tournament where you get these guys playing together. And then, you know, you come back and you have qualifiers that matter. And you didn't really have that feeling where you're like, oh, okay, this team has it together. They have some continuity. You know, you're talking about Jeff Cameron. I think he was one of the guys that he wasn't called for the Gold Cup, was he? It was another guy where you're looking at it and, you know, Nagby played really well because he was playing the Pulisic role, frankly. Pulisic comes back. Nagby's like, I guess I'm out wide. Maybe I'm playing. Maybe I'm not. It was a weird few months that took it from the summer until the U.S. missed out on the World Cup. And you look at it and it's like, oh, what did we get out of this? Oh, right. America won the Gold Cup, which is the most meaningless Gold Cup that, frankly,
it's an off-year Gold Cup.
It was an off-year Gold Cup where Mexico was at the Confed Cup, so they didn't even send their best team. And it just everything about this, I just look at it as really poor management. I want to say mismanagement, but it's not just all on Bruce Arena, because I thought Jurgen Klinsmann was here way too long. He should have been gone way earlier, considering the results. I thought when the U.S. lost that playoff against Mexico at the Rose Bowl, that should have been walking papers time. That was the same time when, you know, the U-20 didn't make the Olympics. So it should have been gone. That should have been it. Those are results. Those are tangible results you can point to and say to a coach, hey, you're not good enough. We didn't get the results. This is a results-based business. But the way Sunil Gulati, head of U.S. soccer, the way that he responded was he did nothing. He let it stay in place. He let it continue, to which you looked at it and you go, what are the expectations? Where is the accountability? And afterwards, after this whole debacle went down, the only person who actually took real accountability was Bruce Arena. He stepped down. Now, Sunil Gulati, he's running again, it seems like.
Opposed, finally, though.
Yeah, well, someone's going to come in. And, you know, we're going to talk about who these potential candidates could be. I'm just going to say this, you know, point blank. I'm a brown guy. I can fill that role, fill that box. I watch a good amount of soccer. I think I have a decent grasp on it. Also, I think, unlike Sunil Gulati, a lot needs to be changed in U.S. soccer from the ground up. So I don't think I'm eligible.
I don't know.
But if they're just looking for like a random American guy who happens to be brown, I can take that spot from Tolino Gladi. I got that wrapped up. Joey, what would you like to see happen? Do you think Sunil do you think he needs to go, first of all?
I think it's never a good thing when one guy has been in charge since what, 06, and he's not run opposed yet. This will be the first time. Steve Gans, the Boston area attorney, is going to run against him. He has the three letters of recommendation required to formally challenge. And now you've got Landon Donovan saying he's going to throw his hat into the ring. And I think that while the bureaucracy part of it might be something that is not a good and like Landon Donovan doesn't really have the wherewithal to do that part of it, I do think hiring the coach and kind of the technical aspects of the job, he would be pretty good for. So if nothing else, that would be an interesting hire. But I just think something has to change. Like, I don't think that there's been an opposed election for U.S. Soccer Federation president, if I'm not mistaken, since 1998. And obviously it hasn't been Gulati that whole time, but he just – It almost says to me, like, the U.S. is finally a proper soccer nation in that money kind of rules all. It's almost like, you know, Gulati was very tight with Sepp Blatter, and he was very in with, like, the FIFA people. And I'm not accusing him of corruption or anything like that. I'm just saying that, you know, when you talk about, like, how there's a structural problem with U.S. soccer, I say, yeah, I agree. I think that there's a structural problem with the governance of U.S. soccer and a structural problem with the governance of world soccer. And I think that that's kind of trickled on down to the United States. And, you know, they've got apparently, what, like 130 million surplus or something with the U.S. Soccer Federation. And that's on the low end. It might be as much as like 400 million. And they say they want to invest that into the youth system, which is just – broken beyond belief, because it phases out the kids from the inner city. It phases out the kids who can't pay those outrageous and exorbitant costs. I think that money has kind of been a death knell to this qualifying campaign in three specific ways. First of all, Gulati, as you mentioned, left Klinsmann aboard way too long.
Yeah, before you even go on with this, let's just go back and touch on that little bit that you touched on in terms of the youth system and the pay to play, which I just think, okay,
big problem.
It's okay. Let's explain this a little bit. If you're good at this sport, you have to pay to join club teams and so on, and kind of progress that way. It's a weird, weird system, because anywhere else in the world, frankly, any other sport, and even in America, if you're good enough, you get to play.
Yep.
But in soccer, it's weird. The way it's structured, if your parents don't have money, you can't play, even if you're good. Clint Dempsey is actually a great example of this, because him and his sister both were athletes, and basically his parents had to decide, hey, was she a swimmer?
Something like that.
In any case, they basically, their parents had to decide, we're either going to send Clint to soccer, or we're going to have to pay for the daughter. And they ended up choosing Clint, and hey,
it worked out, yeah.
Yeah, thankfully for us, who appreciate Clint's career, it worked out. But that's still not right. He was good enough to play. He should have been playing.
Yeah.
It's a broken system, and it's not just inner cities. It's, frankly, rural areas too. Anywhere there's a field and a ball and there's kids playing, there's going to be somebody who's going to be good enough to play. And, you know, you think about all those kids in Brazil who, like, just show up from the streets and ultimately end up being, like, world-class players. You look at their background, it's like nothing. They just didn't have anything else to do, so they kicked a ball around until they got that good at it. You don't have that opportunity in America. You're, frankly, just, unless you were actually connected, you're not going to be able to play.
The best players in other countries are going, and this is why Pulisic has been successful, because his parents realized that this needed to be the case. You know, when he turns 18, he's already getting first team appearances for one of the biggest clubs in the world, and a club that competes in the Champions League and in one of the best leagues in the world. That kid in the United States is going to college. You know, he's going to Florida State, not specifically, but, you know, like in general, like that's where he is. And so by the time these guys get to their early 20s, whereas you're just entering your prime as a player who came up through the European and South American systems, these guys are already kind of as good as they're going to be in America. And that's part of the problem, is just the structure of this country and from pay to play on up. You know, our best guys, maybe more so than, you know, the common refrain is these guys need to be playing in Europe. And while I do agree with that in general, you got to pit yourself against the best competition, I think it's even more important to identify that early and to say, hey, look, you're better off, you know, going to a foreign country and getting a tryout, or like playing with the second tier side of one of these clubs, or just, you know, like coming up through that system and through that academy, than you are staying in the United States, because you're kind of like on this like indentured path in the U.S. Whereas in Europe, it's a much more proven, successful system. So I think that that's a big part of it too, because it kind of hamstrings the talent pool a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and then I just kind of want to add to that. I mean, inherently, we're going to end up losing people who go over there. And Giuseppe Rossi is that example that you can look at and say, hey, you know, he was American, or seemingly like grew up here. He really should be playing for the United States, but he chose to play for Italy instead. And it kind of, you know, it was because he went over there early. And his parents, obviously, had heritage there. But by going and playing in Europe, he became a good enough player to where he could play for Italy. Let's just start with that. There are not too many Americans in history who have been good enough to play for Italy. And when I say too many, I'm not sure. There have been two Americans who have been good enough to play for Italy. But that's kind of what you kind of have to do, you know? It comes down to the simple fact that the best players play in Europe because the money is in Europe. So at this sport, if you were going to play at that highest level,
You got to go
if you're good enough. And if you're not good enough, then I understand how the MLS develops players, and it's not a bad league. It's getting better. But if you are at that upper level of the sport, if you want to compete internationally and have the right type of players, you got to go.
And that goes back to what I was saying, the money thing that has impacted this so negatively. We touched on two of them. The pay-to-play system, the youth system, which is all about – it's not about improving the kids. It's about making money for your club team or your academy or something like that. And then the Sunil Gulati thing, obviously keeping Jurgen Klinsmann too long and then paying him that ridiculous extension before he – you know, after the World Cup, I think it was, before he'd even really proven a whole lot. Like, and then the third thing was that – you know, and this is the trickiest part for me. When I see guys like Clint Dempsey and Jozy Altidore – and Michael Bradley come back to the United States to play MLS while they're still, you know, like late 20s, early 30s, still have plenty to give and could play in Europe if they wanted to. But they're offered, like, Bradley makes, what, $7 million a year for Toronto FC? He's not going to get that in Europe. I can't begrudge him for that.
No,
but
it's not
his fault.
But the fact
is that, you know, that is something, the money in this instance is something keeping them from really reaching their potential, because why wouldn't you go play for the Sounders for like $5.5 million a year, whatever Clint Dempsey has? Why would you ride it out with Fulham or, you know, on Tottenham's bench, I think is where he was before he completed his move back. You know, it's so like, but again, that's why it's so conflicting for me, because it's like, God, if I was in that position, I mean, do you want to raise the profile of the sport by staying over there and challenging yourself? And then even then, you know, Bradley played for Roma for a number of years. Like, Clint Dempsey was a top level, well, maybe not top cream of the crop, but a really solid Premier League striker for years. Yeah. So was Brian McBride. Like, you know, Jozy Altidore never really caught on, but like, these guys did give it the old college try. You know, yeah, they were there and gave it an earnest effort. But to come back to MLS, it's like, I don't like it necessarily, but I do get it, you know?
No, I understand. I mean, I will not begrudge any athlete for making money. They're professionals, and by being a professional, that means you make money. That's the definition of being a professional. So I will not begrudge them.
You get compensated? Does the NCAA know about this?
But,
that's another thing.
Yeah. But I think the point is that when you come to the U.S. and you're playing in MLS – we need to actually – that's why I said I blame Bruce Arena for this a good amount, because I think we need to actually look at it and say, hey, these guys are no longer at the level that they were when they were playing there. And that's something where, you know, we get on Italy for not calling up Giovinco, Sebastian Giovinco, over and over again, because he's in the prime – he's still in the prime of his career.
He's still
like,
fantastic.
He's still like the MVP of the league. But he's – because he's playing here – he's handicapped, and they don't select him in Italy. Even when they didn't have strikers, now they've got some good young talent. But when they didn't have strikers, they were struggling there. The Euros, the most recent ones, they could have used a guy like Giovinco. But they didn't call him because they actually said, hey, the MLS isn't good enough for this. The U.S. doesn't do that. For whatever reason, we, you know, Tim Howard couldn't hack it in Europe. Comes back to the MLS, he's not even playing that well. And I know I keep saying the MLS and people will get upset about that. It's like, whatever. It's a league. I'm used to calling American leagues the NBA, the NFL. You'll get over it. I'm not trying to do it to insult MLS.
Right. I also think, though, that like the guys who were, you know, Roman Torres, who scored the goal to knock the U.S. out of the World Cup, plays in MLS. Like, a lot of those other CONCACAF teams have guys who are staffed with MLS. But I think that is, like, you know, you could on one hand say it's not a problem to have like a lot of MLS guys, which some people do, but I do kind of trend toward your side, where it's like the MLS is really good for helping, you know, they're going to develop these academies. Patrick Vieira is over here kind of developing an academy for Manchester City, a glorified academy for Manchester City, yeah, with NYCFC, and then other clubs are starting to do that too. But that's a good thing. That's where
that's great.
Where you build that talent. But yeah, like, I agree, like, once that talent is built, once that infrastructure is in place, you're not – FC Dallas is not where your final destination should be.
If Christian Pulisic ended up in MLS right now, or even next year or the year after, I would freak out. and it's not because I'm a huge Christian Pulisic fan like you are. I like the kid. I think he has incredible talent. I do think he stands out when he's on the pitch, whether he's playing for Dortmund or the U.S. But – if he did that, I would look at him and I would say it is essentially the same as going to China at age 23. And let me tell you, Oscar is not about to get called up for the Brazil national team.
No.
And that's because he went to a league for the money. You're more than entitled to do it, but you should not be getting called back up. And you know, Christian Pulisic would be an exception if he did that. However, it's just something where for his career, it would make no sense to do something like that.
He doesn't need the money. He's going to, like, if he wanted to today, I guarantee you someone like Liverpool could come along like a 15, 20
There have been rumors for quite some time that Liverpool has been interested because, hey, Fenway Sports Group, that's American owners.
Mr. Klopp.
Yeah, exactly. Jurgen Klopp, who was previously at Dortmund, but Pulisic didn't really figure when he was there as much. And you add in American owners, they understand the marketability of an American star like Pulisic, especially considering he's not going to be the World Cup now, because he was going to be the face of the World Cup.
He was going to be, yeah. Had the U.S. made it. Like, and not even just that.
He already is the face of the team.
He is. I guarantee you, he would have, you know, if you went to, like, publications in Spain or England or something, like, if they did, like, a list of, like, young players to watch the tournament, Pulisic's in all of those.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just because he's a U.S. player, you know, he's just that good.
Like, he's good, and he was the central point of the team, which is, again, I go back to, why wouldn't you call him up for a Gold Cup in the summer when you're trying to build some continuity, hopefully building towards a World Cup roster and a World Cup team and going to qualifications? I know you don't may think it's a big deal, but
I think that the Gold
I've been
Cup,
saying this since before the Gold Cup got know, called up. I was like, why do this?
Jorge Villafana, you know, Paul Areola, Darlington Nagbe, Kellen Acosta, guys like, you know, that had been in the side before, but, you know, I think the Gold Cup did supply a healthy number of contributors to the Final Four qualifiers. It just turned out that they, you know, ultimately collectively weren't good enough.
Yeah, but so. I think, in my opinion, if I was building a team for those four qualifiers, I would try and actually build a side that incorporates everybody who's going to be playing rather than trying out some guys who I might use, who I might not use, then trying to stick them in different positions because you're calling other guys back that weren't called initially. I mean, it wasn't one of those, we're going to take a youth side because, hey, Clint Dempsey was playing.
It was a weird
call up selection. But hey, we'll get past that. We'll move onward to what is next for the USA. What would you do if you were Christian Pulisic and the U.S. calls you up for a friendly because, hey, there's no World Cup coming?
I mean, it's I'm kind of torn because on one hand, I do understand the honor it is to put on the shirt every time that you have a chance to. But on the other hand, I'm like, if I'm Pulisic, like, what's in it for me? You know, and he's in a position where he has done so much for this team and put in such a great work rate and been such a great representative and had a hand in so many goals and, like, whatever success the team had during the qualifying camp. Wasn't he involved in, like, 15 goals in the hex or something like that? Like, that's unconscious. Like, he's done all that, so he has the right, if he so chooses, to say, like, listen, get everything sorted out, you know. Because, I mean, you know, and this kind of ties into the overall future. Like, Todd Ramos apparently is lukewarm on being an interim manager, and I don't blame him. The work he's done with the lower levels has been fantastic, and he deserves to be named the manager straight away if that's the direction that they go, not interim. You know, he doesn't have to prove himself as far as I'm concerned. And so if I'm Pulisic and I see this, and, you know, if it's one thing if Ramos, for example, gets named manager permanently on a permanent basis and says, hey, Pulisic, I want to start building a rapport with you. Okay, of course I'm going to come up for the Portugal friendly. Of course I'm going to, you know, try to play as much as I can with you to kind of develop that rapport. But if it's an interim thing and it's just all about, you know, guaranteeing his employment for another day, it's just I just don't understand what the advantage there for Pulisic is. And I know, again, that might offend people who've played. God knows I've never even come close to playing for the national team, and I do respect the fact that it's an honor to put on that shirt every time out. But I just, you know, I'm a cynic. I just don't see what's in it for Pulisic, and I do think it ties into the future of the program kind of as a whole and whoever's next.
So for me, I kind of look into, and nothing against Todd Ramos. I think he's a good coach. He's obviously, you know, paid his dues and seems like he'd be in line for a position like this. But I ask you, Joey, because you're more up to the pulse of U.S. soccer. Would you like to see them go out and get a manager or a coach that's not American / not coming through the North American system? Would you like someone who's maybe European-based? Or you know what? I'll throw out a wild card. Tata Martino, who has come over to the U.S., Atlanta United's coach.
Off to a great start.
If you want to talk about a coach that came over and, frankly, just revolutionized MLS overnight. I mean, he took a team that most people were like, oh, this is kind of like a franchise team. It's an expansion team, not a franchise. An expansion team. Who knows what we're going to get out of it? And he comes in, and they're just they're gangbusters. They're amazing to watch. They're fun. They're filling up the stands. They're doing everything right. And you know what? It all comes from the fact that they're playing it the right way. They're going through the right training. And those are not methods that came through MLS or came through any North American systems. He's Argentine by, you know, nationality, spent some time in Europe, was actually a manager for Barcelona for a little brief period. FC Barcelona, yes, Lionel Messi, he manages the guy.
That one.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got some gravitas, but you know, a guy like him or him, let's just say him directly, or, you know, even, what about Sam Allardyce?
Oh, God. No offense, Big Sam, no.
You don't want to play Route 1 football?
No. I do think, and I wrote about this when Klinsmann got sacked about a year ago, actually, now. I don't think the fact, whatever failures there were under the Klinsmann administration, and don't get me wrong, I actually was a big fan of his for a while. I do think that some very good things happened underneath him. I didn't think that his ultimate failure should have dissuaded the United States from looking abroad for managers. I wouldn't have a problem, for example, if David Wagner or Peter Vermees becomes the coach, or Todd Ramos, obviously. But I because if you look at it, the U.S. has been out of the knockouts into the knockout stages in the World Cup four times since, you know, kind of the birth of modern U.S. soccer. Twice it was under an American head coach, Bruce Arena and Bob Bradley, and twice it was actually under a European coach, Bora Milutinovic, and then Jurgen Klinsmann. So I think that that's definitely an option that's on the table. Going back to what we talked to earlier, I think it might be better for the U.S. to hire an American coach, or at least, as you mentioned with Tata Martino, an MLS – a coach with kind of like MLS experience, because for – you know, we both agree. We don't really like the fact that there's a ton of MLS players on the side. But the fact is the fact, and that is, you know, the reality. And one of the appeals of Bruce Arena bringing him in for, you know, the fix in the early part of the hex, or the supposed fix, is that he knew a lot of these players. He kind of fought the same fight that they did in terms of legitimizing MLS and turning American soccer into something that is successful and self-sustaining and could be you can be proud of. And I just think it might behoove the program to go in that direction, because – and I also think that you have to be careful. I mean, David Wagner of Huddersfield is a big – popular name out there. A lot of people are saying he's a dark horse, and there's very good reason to consider him. He is American, also half German as well, but you know that he can appeal to some of those players you were talking about, the Fabian Johnsons, the John Brookses.
I mean, as long as there's German, as long as there's U.S. bases in Germany, we're going to have an option to potentially have half German kids, because they didn't grow up in the pay-to-play culture that the U.S. has.
And so that's good.
That's why they exist. And I mean, you know. Do we have any bases in France? Because we could use some of that young French talent.
They got too much.
We could definitely use some of that.
Yeah, but so, I mean, he's good for that reason. He's good because, I mean, let's face it, no offense to the Huddersfield Town faithful that might be listening. Sir Patrick Stewart, if you're out there, I'm a big fan. But I don't really know how much more he can do there. He guided them into the Premier League, and I don't ever really like to ascribe things to luck in sports. I think that's a cheap crutch and like a pathetic axiom a lot of people use. But they were pretty fortunate to qualify for the Premier League the way they did last year. So, I say all that to say this. You could easily see him being available soon if he realizes, hey, I can't, you know, do this. I can't really do much more at Huddersfield. The problem with that, though, is, and I think this is something you have to take into consideration when you talk about hiring Peter Vermees or, you know, some of these other guys too. There's a big difference between managing club and national team, obviously, as you know. Like, David Wagner is so drilled in his principles, and you don't really get that chance because you're not on the training pitch every day with your national team. I mean, part of the reason that Spain took over the world basically from the late aughts to the early part of this decade is because not only did they have a generational influx of all-time great talent, but a lot of those talents played with each other every week at Barcelona and Real Madrid. And
mainly
you have
Barcelona.
One of the few guys, Vicente Del Bosque, who proved adept at managing both national team and club team, where he had a lot of success with Real Madrid. And so that all kind of fit together. And I think if you're the U.S., you got to take a look at that. Because Wagner, as great of a job as he's done with Huddersfield and as appealing and exciting as a hire as he would be, he's got a great personality for the U.S., you do have to take stuff like that into consideration.
You know, in like a year and a half, we're just going to have Bob Bradley.
Seriously. Back. I know. Steve Sampson's probably waiting somewhere, like throwing his hat in the ring.
Bob Bradley's going to have a good season with LAFC, and he will be back in charge of the U.S. men's national team. All right. Well, on that sour note, sorry, Bob Bradley, we will take a break and we'll come back and talk some Champions League and get into the European leagues. We'll be right back. All right, and we are back. So with the Champions League, we just had the third match day. So we're halfway through the group stages now, and we're kind of getting a clearer picture of where everybody sits. Some major results to talk about from this this round. Liverpool 7-0 over Maribor.
That was some after two frustrating draws, it kind of felt like that was cathartic for them a little bit.
Yeah. Real Madrid, Tottenham 1-1. Real Madrid actually fortunate to be 1-1 on that one a little bit because Serge Aurier made an awful tackle to give away a penalty kick. Technically, though, own goal for Real Madrid as well because Varane, sweet finish if you really want to be honest.
if he was wearing just, a Tottenham shirt.
Yeah, just in the wrong goal. Man City, Napoli, 2-1. We will dig deep into this one, or I will in a few minutes, but let's just get through the scores and talk about the groups first. And then a couple other big scores. Dortmund with Apollon Nicosia 1-1. I think we will definitely get touched back on what that means. RB Leipzig 3-2 over Porto. Those were Tuesday's games. Now Wednesday's games, Atletico Madrid drawing 0-0 with Carabag. I still can't say the name of that team, but hey, close enough. Juventus 2-1 over Sporting. Barcelona beat Olympiacos 3-1. Bayern with Jupp Heynckes at the helm now. Yes. Mr. Treble, Jupp Heynckes, in his, I believe, fourth stint in charge of Bayern Munich now. He's in his 70s. But, hey, he's still the right man for the job. Honestly, yeah. I would give it to him for a one-year interim for sure. PSG, 4-0 over Anderlecht. Man U squeaking out a 1-0 over Benfica. 3-3, just awesome goal-scoring games. Just incredible goals all around, especially Edin Dzeko, and I will touch on him in a moment. 3-3, Chelsea-Roma. And then 2-0, CSKA Moscow, CSKA Moscow, if you want to say it that way, over losing out to Basel 2-0. And so this is how it stands. I'm going to go group by group, and we'll make some comments as it goes. Man U up with a maximum of 9 points, Basel in 6. And that kind of looks like where it's sitting with in Group A. Joey, you want to add anything?
United got a favorable draw, but how many times over the years have we seen a team, particularly from England, get a favorable draw in the group stage and not make the most of it? I think you got to credit them for, you know, doing what they have to do against this admittedly a little bit weaker group.
Yeah, and you know, Pogba's been out too, and they've been a little bit out of sorts since that's happened. Really, you know, dour draw, we'll call it, last weekend. Against Liverpool, really awful.
A Mourinho draw.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? This honestly looked like it was going to be a Mourinho draw too, but they got lucky with a goal. Group B, PSG with a maximum 9 points, Bayern behind in 6, and those still look like the two teams that'll make it through. Jupp Heynckes looks like he'll have Bayern right back on track. They had 5 on the last weekend when Jupp came in and re-debuted. But yeah, I think Bayern will still finish second in that group more than likely, unless they actually do beat PSG when they have the home game, and then who knows? It's all up to goal differential. I'll still give it to PSG. Group C, Chelsea top with 7 points, Roma on 5 points, Atletico Madrid only 2 points halfway through the group stages. It's not looking good for Atleti.
That's a little surprising. I think if you had to pick like a most underwhelming performance so far by a club you expected to be good, it had to be Atletico Madrid. And I think that Chelsea win at the new stadium, whose name I'm forgetting, not the Vicente Calderon, is arguably the biggest result of anybody in the first round of or the first half of the Champions League group stage. And yeah, Atleti, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and today Roma really brought it to Chelsea. And Edin Dzeko, I'm just going to give him a statistical shout-out, which is my favorite thing to do. 7 goals in 7 Serie A matches, 3 Champions League goals in 3 Champions League matches.
Very efficient.
Now, this is not just all Edin Dzeko's done. Anyone who forgot about him when he went to Italy, I most certainly did not. 29 goals and 9 assists and 33 starts and 4 substituted appearances in Serie A last season, along with 8 goals and 8 Europa League appearances last season. The man has been scoring goals.
He has.
And Man City, as a reminder, picked Wilfred Bony over him. So, hey, you know what? You made your choice. Where's Bony these days? Not at Man City.
No, he's not.
All right, so moving on. Group D, Barcelona top with 9 points. So after all the craziness, they still look like they're going to probably pretty easily progress. If you're 9 points after three matches, more than likely you're going to go through.
Especially when you're in a group with Juve, admittedly very tough, but also, you know, no offense, Sporting and Olympiacos, not really, you don't really see them rising.
Juventus is on 6 points, Sporting on 3 points. So Juve is still in position to get through.
I think this group, real quick, is a little similar to Group B because you've got two really strong teams at the top. In B, it's PSG and Bayern. In this group, it's Barcelona and Juventus. And the home side in the first match day, when those four teams clashed, won big. But the teams that lost those matches, Juventus and Bayern, have done what they've needed to do since then to stay pretty, you know, in good position to advance. So I think those two groups are kind of playing out similarly.
So Group E. Now, this one is where we start getting a little tricky. Liverpool and Spartak Moscow, both on 5 points each. Sevilla on 4 points. But that's 7-0. Seven-goal differential has Liverpool top. And I feel like that's actually going to be the difference when it's all said and done, because I can't rely on Liverpool being consistent. I don't think Jurgen Klopp can. I don't think anyone can. So for now, I think those 7 goals actually mean a whole lot. And I think they'll mean even more when the next three matches are played. More than likely, someone will be tied on points. Could be Liverpool. Maybe they just win it outright. But I see them passing through. Sevilla, Spartak Moscow. Honestly, who knows how that goes? Because Moscow, one thing about when the Russians play, they play earlier games. Also, the home field actually really does have an impact. It seems to anyhow. So with both the CSKA Moscow and Spartak, and apparently with Carabao too today with Atletico Madrid. So it's a I think that'll be an interesting finish. There's nothing decided basically in that.
Very
group.
Very interesting. I think that it favors Liverpool and Sevilla. Both because, I mean, the name brand recognition is there, but they both have pretty good sides, and they've both played two away matches in the first half, so they got two home matches in the final three, which will no doubt help them. Sevilla, or Spartak Moscow is like, are they the team that beat Sevilla 5-1, or are they the team that tied Maribor, the team that Liverpool just spanked 1-1? Like, where do they come out on that? I think ultimately you're going to see Liverpool and Sevilla advance out of this group, but I agree. This is going to be a lot. This is going to be arguably the most exciting finish because you got three teams that are right there.
That's Group E. E for exciting. Also, somehow, even though it's not spelled right, also for inconsistent. Yes, I know it's not spelled with an E, but I will now spell. Yeah.
It fits.
All right, we'll move on to Group F, and I'm going to linger on this one because I want to talk a little bit about Man City as well. Because Man City and Napoli played each other in arguably the most exciting 90 minutes of this round. Let's just first of all say Man City top with 9 points, Shakhtar Donetsk on 6 points, and Napoli is in third, which is kind of weird if you saw the match play out. So let's go over that match real quick. Man City, for the first 30 minutes of that match, was arguably the best team I've seen play in any match in all of Europe. They were incredible. And, you know, some people will say, and some of the commentators are saying, Napoli came out looking scared. I don't think that was the case at all. I just thought Man City was putting every ball in the perfect place, not giving up possession at all, one bit. And Napoli really didn't have that much they could do. It seemed like they came out with a little bit of an early press, but then when they, you know, kind of got forced back into their own half, they could not maintain possession out of their half. Man City took the ball back every time, was just jamming it down their throats, got two early goals, but really could have had three or four in that first half hour. And then the next 60 minutes, Napoli was the better side. Go figure. Napoli is a really, really good team. As a reminder, this team won the Super Cup over Juventus. They're undefeated in Serie A, top. And not undefeated, perfect. So this is a very good team. Halfway through, I still would not count that side out at all. And you know, when they go to São Paulo, I think Man City's could be in real trouble because of the way that it shook out for those final 60 minutes. Frankly, there was a missed penalty. They did end up scoring a penalty. They should have had another couple chances that they could have put away. Napoli very well could have at least drawn against Man City after Man City played arguably the best football I've seen this entire season by anybody. And, you know, kind of going back to something we've talked about since the start of the season, with Aguero being hurt, even though he was on the bench for this match, Man City actually has that unit that I'd been begging for, and what made them unstoppable on this instance, which is Jesus in the middle with Sterling and Sané just providing incredible amounts of pace, and then having frankly, the genius of Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva creating everything.
KDB. He's great.
Well, right now, arguably the best player in all of Europe. And it really is.
And therefore the world, unless you want to walk back your MLS comments from earlier.
Yeah. Okay. Just went there. Just went there. Well, it's actually, you know what? I'll say right now, if you're a Belgium fan, you got to be real, real happy because Dries Mertens has been ripping up Serie A and just looks incredible. And then you add in De Bruyne. You still have Hazard. Lukaku is playing out of his mind.
Yeah.
Like you still have Vertonghen and like the Tottenham duo in the center of defense.
Nangolin.
Technically, you could say company included, but I'm not sure how he figures in. I think he just has the armband, and frankly, I would not start him. I would just I would go with Alderweireld and Vertonghen personally, but hey, you know, I don't make – Roberto Martinez gets to make those choices. In any case, I just kind of wanted to harp on Man City in particular and Napoli. I think that Group F is really going to be interesting. I think Man City, without a doubt, will make it through.
Yeah, and two things for me real quick on this. Napoli, I think you could argue, they have the win, obviously, against Feyenoord in this group, and they've also – they had that bad loss at Shakhtar Donetsk, but I think you could make a convincing argument, and you kind of alluded to it. Like, that was the best game that they've played in the Champions League the other day. Just because they lost to City doesn't mean they weren't up to the task. And number four there, the last place team, Feyenoord, where do they play? The Netherlands? Where's Leander? Hey, Leander, defend your boys, all right?
Leander flaked on us on this one. I think that's just a little bitterness coming out from Joey. But all good. We'll move on to Group G. Besiktas. Ryan Babel's Besiktas, as a reminder.
How about them, huh?
Top with 9 points.
Don't sleep on the Super League.
Maximum 9 points. Joey with a little shout-out to the comments. and then RB Leipzig with 4 points. Porto on 3 points. I think also in this group, second place is up for grabs. I would not count out Porto, and I would not count out Leipzig. I think Leipzig's actually come to life a little bit more. I would kind of lean towards them at this point. I think they...
To win the group?
No, to come in second in advance.
Oh, absolutely.
Over Porto. I think that it's only a point separating them right now, but if you really look at the way that Leipzig's been trending, I mean, they just beat Dortmund in the Bundesliga as well, and they didn't even play their three best players on the weekend, and they still pulled that victory out. So I think if you've been watching Leipzig, I think that they've gotten more and more comfortable in Europe.
That's what it is. I think that's the key.
And I mean that they just came off beating Porto 3-2 in what was also a pretty fun match.
Right. I think Leipzig, and we kind of saw this, you know, when a nouveau riche side, so to speak, comes into the Champions League for the first time. We kind of saw this with Man City, and their struggles were even more pronounced than RB Leipzig. It does take a little bit of time to kind of get comfortable in that environment. And, yeah, Porto is good, but I do think Leipzig is – I think Besiktas, first of all, has done enough to kind of, like, guarantee that they're going to go through, even if it's not mathematical. And I think RB Leipzig is going to finish second. Monaco, you know, we've been very inspired by the football that they've played the last couple of years, but there comes a point where you can only lose so many Mbappes and Bakayokos and
it's not
players.
Lose. Like, they sold their entire roster. So,
you know, like, they're gonna reboot that. We have no evidence. We have no reason to believe they won't be back here in a year or two with young players because they're really smart. They're really good at scouting, but it's just this year they can't. I can't see it happening for them.
Hat tip to Radamel Falcao though. He's still scoring goals. So. Yes. Good on him. And then Group H, we get to Tottenham and Real Madrid level on 7 points and actually level on goal differential too. And wait, who is that? Christian Pulisic and Dortmund on 1 point? 1 point.
That was bad yesterday. They had to come back to draw Applewell. I mean, the one thing you could say, I think yesterday, if you would have drawn up a scenario where Real Madrid and Tottenham can all but assure that they're going to advance, it'd be how things played out yesterday. Because neither team came away without a point. You know, they both got a point. And not only that, Dortmund didn't get a win over Applewell, which had just been bad against, you know, the other two. I think they twinned 3-0 losses to the other two sides. And yes, Dortmund's got two of its last three in the group stage at the Westfalenstadion, but man, that is a deep hole to dig out of.
I think we're just getting the wrong narrative here. I think we shouldn't have blamed Bruce Arena at all. Christian Pulisic loses on the World Cup, comes back.
He's the only guy who's doing anything right.
Dortmund loses at home, which they never do, ruined their undefeated record this season. And then draw with Apoel? Come on. This is all on Pulisic. I think it's clear who's to blame for the U.S. missing out on the World Cup.
Hang on a sec. I'm calling my lawyer. We're going to sue you for slander.
Another important note to make. Lionel Messi hit 100 goals in European competition.
And what a way to do it.
Oh, what a heck of a free kick. Goalkeeper even got... He tried to stop it.
He got to it.
But it still hit his hand and went to the roof of the net. It's fabulous. Speaking of great goals also, the Edin Dzeko goal. There's one of them. He had two goals today, but one of those goals is definitely worth watching. On the volley, full run. And like I said earlier... This sent him out to Italy for Wilfred Bonny.
Yes.
Yeah. Lionel Messi, only the second player ever to hit 100 goals in European competition. Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously, the other one. We are not going to have the Messi-Ronaldo debate. They're both great.
We're not going to have that, and we're going to talk about this on a future project. Can we just admit that we're watching the two greatest soccer players of all time contemporaneously? I mean, just throwing it out there. Maybe we'll talk about it in the future.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree, and if you want to argue somebody from a different era, which more than entitled to do, great. I will include them as well. I think you can just say that we are watching two of the all-time greatest
10
players.
Guys at the absolute worst.
Yeah, it's well. I think top 10 might be downgrading them. Yep. Top five.
Top five.
It is a privilege to watch these guys, and I will not bother going to the argument of picking one side or the other. I will just say that they are the only two players to ever hit 100 goals in European competition. So hat tip to Mr. Lionel Messi for joining that exclusive club. More than likely, considering his age, he will eventually pass Ronaldo. But hey, who knows the way Ronaldo's been scoring? Who knows?
He's not slowing down either.
Jeez, in Champions League he's not. He got his first La Liga goal finally, but in Champions League he is cannot stop scoring, and he's becoming more and more of a predator in the box and kind of not really heading to the wings at all anymore. You give Ronaldo 3-4 chances in a match in the box to get shots off, he's going to score.
Yeah,
it's just like just really how it goes. He's going to score, and considering the supporting cast they have, he's going to get those chances. You drop in a penalty here and there, he's going to score some goals. It's just how it's going to roll. But that is the Champions League roundup. Joey, you wanted to make a note or two about what's coming up on the upcoming weekend?
Yeah, the biggest clash, I think, across the big five leagues is Spurs versus Liverpool on Sunday. And then, to a lesser extent, Arsenal and Everton is the warm-up to that match, if you will.
It is the right quality.
The great quality. Maybe if we have the cojones, we can win this match.
I think Arsenal is definitely the smaller of those two.
It's two Europa League teams, I know that. A lot of Europe this weekend, with the exception, again, of that Tottenham-Liverpool match, playing mid-table to lower-table sides. And I think that, if you're looking at the trickiest fixtures for some of these teams we've been talking about, I think you got to look at two in particular. Dortmund and your guy, Christian Pulisic, have to go to Eintracht Frankfurt, who is currently 6th or 7th, I believe, in the Bundesliga table. So that's a good side. That's no walk in the park. And I think, and I was telling you this before we started recording, Watford, man, they're getting results. Yeah. They're playing well. And if Chelsea thinks that they're just going to roll because they're at home against this Watford side, Troy Deeney and the boys might have, might feel a little differently and change your mind. So
they're Champions League side right now.
They are. They're fourth, yeah. So that's, a couple of things to watch for this week.
Messi will not be able to do it on a cold Wednesday night.
Yeah, what is that in the old refrain?
In Watford. But I think that's about all we got for right now. I think that's that should cover you guys. Sorry if we got a little bit long-winded on the U.S. stuff, but I thought,
I needed it.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, for various reasons, I was out of town, Joey was out of town, Leander still couldn't make time for us. Henry's also just been working tirelessly. By the way, if you don't follow Henry, you really should. Henry Bushnell, look him up. He's been just doing an awesome job for us. But all in all, I think it was time for us to just kind of talk about the U.S. now that it's settled. If we'd done it a week ago, I think there would have been a lot more expletives thrown in there.
Yeah, maybe it's better that we didn't do it last week.
Yeah, especially considering I don't really take a let's say, friendly approach to it. Remember, if you know, if I can get those recommendations, I fit the color scheme that the U.S. soccer head job is going for.
I can't even. This is not my conversation. I'm just saying.
In any case, all right. For Joey Galino, this is Shahan Ahmed. Thank you for listening to the FC Yahoo podcast. Thanks.